Welcome to another episode of the Marketing Society podcast. For today's pod, we're going to be talking about gaming, esports, things of that nature. I'm your host, Mike Piggott, editor at the Society, by the way. Always forget to introduce myself. So I'm delighted to introduce two guests that are going to help me talk about this. I've got Luke Harrison, creative technologist, and Jana Hladíková, Xbox international sales lead, both at Verizon Media. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much, Michael. And hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Hi, guys. So I just want to do a quick intro from you both first. So if you could kind of explain your roles. Jana, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Xbox specialist at Verizon Media for EMEA and Brazil. And basically what my job entails is that I work primarily with game publishers, app partners, and what we call non-endemic advertisers. So those who are not natural to the gaming platform, to help them advertise on Xbox.
Cool. And Luke, we chopped your title down to creative technologist. So what weird and wonderful thing do you do?
So I help brands and advertisers understand all of the sort of creative technologies available today. So there's a lot kind of augmented reality, virtual events, kind of what does it mean and how can they use it to create immersive experiences for ad campaigns? And that's where I come in. It's really the ideation and how best to use those technologies.
Okay, so that would probably explain the interesting things going on in your background, I think. So lots of cool stuff. Board games, maybe? I don't know. I'll shut up now. Okay, right. First off, as a sort of a cards on the table thing, this time last year, I got an Xbox and signed up to the Game Pass. So I sort of returned to gaming after probably a decade away from it. And I found it really great. It was really good in this time for like escapism and mental health and all that sort of stuff. And I was reading something. I think you guys sent over some research, and I definitely wasn't alone in that boat. Part of your research was saying that there was something like 12 million new gamers in EMEA last year. Was that just because of lockdown, or is that part of an overall trend that's been going on in the last few years? People either returning to gaming or finding it for the first time.
That's totally correct. So across EMEA, we have now reached 14 million unique users. And like you're saying, with people being at home, wanting to connect with family and friends in other meaningful ways, we've definitely seen an increase of activity on the console across every single market. So just to give you a bit of context, year over year, if we look at the UK, January 2020 versus January 2021, we had an increase of plus 89% activity just in that market. And in addition to people wanting to connect with their friends and family, I think what really fueled the growth was also the release of the new console that we had in Q4 in November with the next-gen Xbox Series S and X. And just like you're mentioning, the Xbox Game Pass, which enables you to play cross-device and also play on other devices than just your console.
Yeah, it does feel kind of an interesting time, and I guess we'll get onto stuff about the Game Pass in a bit. I wanted to talk about because obviously I don't know if how much the pandemic has sort of forced people to kind of embrace kind of gaming and consoles, versus like how much they're going to carry on afterwards. But I wanted to start with kind of some misconceptions around gaming. So the sort of, it's perhaps a thing just for young people. And I'm sure anyone that's given it any time or thought or research will know that that's not the case. But just from your point of view, what types of gamers are you guys seeing these days? I mean, half of them are over 35 now. Is that correct? Is that a recent trend or?
Yes, I mean, you have very good facts, Michael.
I'm stealing all your facts.
I feel like you know about Xbox more than me. But yeah, I totally agree that there are many misconceptions about gamers and specifically about console gamers. a lot of people might imagine, okay, console gamers are kind of hardcore Call of Duty players, which of course are very important gamers for the platform. But we do see increasingly more casual gamers, but also gamers who have been loyal to the platform and have evolved with the platform over time. So imagine a gamer who bought an Xbox 10 years ago, now probably has a partner at home, kids, and might be using a console in a different way. So they might be inviting friends to play FIFA, but then with their partner or their family, they might be playing a different type of game. And that is reflected in the average age. So we saw on Xbox that the average age is 34 worldwide, and that 34% of the global Xbox audience were millennials. And surprisingly, I mean, that is exactly the same age as for the PlayStation as well. So very, very similar profile across both consoles in terms of the demographic. So you're asking about also like kind of a woman. So I would say in terms of the gender breakdown has been 60-40. So 60% men, 40% female. Which is still not 50-50, but it's much more diverse than you would see on a streaming platform like Twitch. And half of the users have families as well.
Yeah, I did find that one a definitely an interesting one, the parents thing as well. I guess if you've got people in their sort of early 30s, I wonder if it's a case like, I don't know, maybe they're going out less, they're raising families and things like that. So it becomes that sort of entertainment hub that, you know, you can use for them, like when they're getting some time off from the kids, or maybe use it for to keep the kids busy or kind of everything. But yeah, it definitely feels like I'm moving away from the single teenage guy in his room or something of that kind of demographic. Do you even get that anymore? Is that still a thing that people think, or is that just me?
No. It is, a misconception that we get. And funnily enough, most of the consoles are in the living room, so they're not kind of in the, you know, in the man's den, like people try to call it, but they're actually in the center of the household. And just like you mentioned, Xbox being an entertainment hub, one thing I completely forgot to say, and it's good that you're pointing it out, is that people also don't use it just for gaming. I mean, you have access to your Netflix, to Amazon Prime, to all of your kind of entertainment apps. So it's really a hub of entertainment rather than just gaming.
Yeah, I realized that when I got mine, because I had a Fire, I got like an oldish TV, and I had an Amazon Fire Stick plugged into it so I could get all my streaming stuff. And then when I got an Xbox, I was like, oh, great, I don't need this stupid stick anymore. Like, I mean, it was an old one, so it was it would overheat a lot, and I didn't want to have to buy a new one or get a better TV. And having a console seemed to solve all of those problems. It was a much more elegant solution, I found. So with in terms of brands, because obviously, you know, our audience are kind of marketing directors, CMOs, for the large part in terms of marketing society members. One of the things I was looking at was I wanted to explore was in-game advertising and sort of how it works. So because I've seen examples before, like, I don't know, like in driving games, there'll be, you know, banners or placards or something of brands advertising. And I'm just curious how that works. Do you have like pre-coded slots in games, or, you know, can advertising move around like it does in the real world? Who wants to field that question?
Yeah, I'll take that one. And you're completely right. And that's the choice that developers have now to sort of monetize their games a little bit through ad revenue. So what they do is when they craft these sort of 3D virtual worlds in which the games are played, they're able to place these digital billboards as placeholders around their world. So around the side of a racetrack, a football pitch, or even in kind of an open world type environment. And then sort of the technologies behind it will bring in those display formats. So that can be a static sort of image or a video ad. And so when you're playing the games, the ads are served into it. So for the user, they will see those ads as they're racing around game tracks or running around a virtual world.
Does it ever happen that it's sort of like the other way around in terms of, I don't know, like brands coming to, I don't know, gaming studios or, you know, to you guys or Microsoft or somebody and sort of saying like, I don't know, like, we're interested in these areas. Are any of these games being built so they can sort of get in at the early stages? Does that ever happen?
it's not as common as it was, say 10, 15 years ago. Like back in the day, we had titles like Pepsi Man or even Crazy Taxi, where brands would sponsor slots in those games to put in. Like Crazy Taxi had a KFC and a Pizza Hut you could drive up to, and they were key points in the games. But now when we look at game development, it's a lot more costly and time consuming than it was back then. So it's less common, but we do see things like mini games or little arcade style games as part of ad campaigns. And they work reasonably well when they're done compared to a big brand funded game.
I was just wondering, because like obviously games are getting more and more sophisticated in terms of how they're being built and how, you know, open world games and people interacting with them and changing stuff within them constantly. And also like games having updates so that they can change regularly. And I'm just curious, like how brands can play into that a little bit, I suppose, like, you know, whether they can just turn up in different parts of games or, you know, switch depending on the user and like it be incredibly personalized depending on and perhaps immersive if it's an open world gaming experience.
I think with that, it's about leveraging the games that already exist. So the opportunity is that they can sort of almost in real time sort of get these in-game ads or work to relatively quickly do an in-game event or sponsorship. So if they was to kind of build a game, that's like a 12-month commitment. And then sort of by the time they got the finished product, it may be out of date or irrelevant to the audience they're trying to reach. But now they can sort of turn around a lot quicker and sort of align with gaming to play in that space.
Mm. I was just thinking like in terms of like in-game advertising and say like versus like, you know, like in TV or movies where you have, I don't know, product placement or something like that, and it's all fairly obvious, but brands at least kind of historically understand that. When you guys are sort of interacting and speaking with brands, do they sort of understand in-game advertising? Do they kind of get it as a concept?
It depends on sort of the way they want to get in. Sometimes there is a little bit of education, especially for advertisers who are not familiar with gaming. Maybe that's not an interest to them, so they haven't spent too much time in those worlds. But once we've kind of gone over sort of the range of opportunities, there's always one that kind of aligns best with the brand. It's like the way in for them, it's this one. In-game works for me best, or leveraging a game title, that's going to work for us better. There's a way in for everyone, and I think just got to kind of explore it a little bit to understand what best suits for the brand.
And to move on for a second, I wanted to touch on augmented reality. So obviously most people are kind of familiar with the whole, you know, a while back Pokemon Go, and sort of everyone, there was a bit of a craze and everyone was running around town trying to find, got to catch them all and all that sort of stuff. But I was watching one of your presentations, and you guys did something with Doritos. Is that right? In a sort of a COVID-safe way that involved augmented reality. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. That's right. We worked with Doritos and PlayStation to do a gamified campaign where we created an online experience, so users could go to this in a browser, and they would play a game very similar to Pokemon Go, in which we dropped digital prizes to find around sort of the real world locations for a map. And so obviously we had to react pretty quickly to all of the COVID lockdowns happening, because our game was initially, we would drop these virtual bags of Doritos around the country and they'd be found in augmented reality. But when it meant that everyone was stuck at home, we implemented a play at home mechanic where the user could drop a pin and the digital objects would come to them. So we'd have a number of those prizes or chances to win appear in their local area. So rather than going out to central London to collect these things, they could just say, hey, drop them to me in Tottenham. And a few bags will appear within a couple of meters of them. So they could play that game safely, securely at home, and still have the chance to win.
And I guess because I was thinking, oh, you know, what other, like, because basically someone was talking recently about one of our members wrote a piece, I think, maybe a few months ago, and it was about how it's easy to work on sexy brands, like in a way, because they're sexy brands. You can, whatever you do, it's going to seem cool and great and exciting, but it's much harder to do good marketing on kind of more slightly more dull brands. And bring them to life. So that's where you have to be really creative and inventive. And I was just thinking of sort of augmented reality examples. And this might not really lend itself well to my argument, because some of these are quite sexy brands. But the point is that, you know, as a marketer, it's like it gives you perhaps license to play in a way that maybe you wouldn't be able to in any other form. So I just want to run these examples by you. And obviously, if you know any of them, and see what your thoughts are. But I think ASOS did a catwalk, like an augmented reality catwalk. Manchester City have been doing stadium tours. Gucci have done try-on shoes. Toyota did car demos. IKEA showed how furniture would look in your home. And the recent one that I've used is Dulux have done a visualizer app where you can see what paint looks like on your walls. Because I've been trying to find a paint that like matches the paint. I just can't find it for my kitchen. It's driving me crazy. So I guess what I'm sort of getting at is that kind of license for marketers to perhaps be really imaginative and really play and test and learn. Is that a kind of thing that you're finding when you're talking to brands about uses of things like augmented reality?
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good point. It's like to be playful with it. It's a new space, and it's crafting stuff that isn't. It doesn't have to go by the rules of the physical world. You can kind of do what you want, and you can do it almost instantly. So, like the painting your walls example, that's something you can do at a click of a button. I can't imagine sort of doing my entire wall in an instant to see if it looked correct in the right shade of yellow. But it's understanding kind of what your brand is, kind of what stories you want to tell as well. There's a way to bring those experiences to the user. So the accessibility of augmented reality now in a browser is something you can have a one-click-to experience. So you don't have to go through the hurdles of downloading an app or being on a specific platform anymore. You can simply target them to a specific destination to have this experience and deploy that at scale. So there's a lot of benefits to doing this. And again, seeing a product in your home or having a digital experience in your environment, I think done in the right way, that can be really rewarding for the user and for the brand as well.
And I always think, look, because the way humans are wired, like sometimes that, like a storytelling aspect to what you do, nearly always that tends to be one of the best ways that you can engage people, because it starts to connect to them emotionally and things like that. And I kind of, in a slight segue, I want to mention something you guys did called Project Midnight. I was wondering if you could talk about what that was and how that came about.
Yeah, so Project Midnight, this was my baby for a long time. I've always wanted to do a virtual escape room. I'm a massive fan of traditional escape rooms, but there was no kind of better time for it. Kind of this happened in October last year when everyone was kind of stuck at home, locked down. And for our sort of yearly B2B event, we had to do it digitally, and we didn't want to go down the route of come to this online portal, watch some videos, and then go your ways. Because what we'd usually do at events like this is we would meet with our clients, we would have experiences together, we would usually work with immersive theatre companies to do something special to create a memorable experience. So we took a step back and thought about how we could do that online. So as part of this event, we created a browser-based 3D environment where you could turn up and explore to discover all of the content for the B2B event, which was some video seminars. But then as part of that, and because it was also close to Halloween, we created Project Midnight, which was using 3D technologies in the browser to have a shared escape room experience. So what you could do is you could turn up with a few colleagues, form a team, and explore this escape room together. But going back to storytelling, we started that first and foremost. So when you went into this escape room experience, you wasn't met with a 3D environment, you was met with a cutscene, a video sequence kind of bringing you into that world and really immersing you. So you knew why you was in this 3D location, what you was trying to do, and then what the next steps were. And we worked with immersive theatre company Swamp Motel to deliver this project.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I think, I suppose I'm trying to draw a bit of a common thread between, I don't know, like, sort of playing around with technology, you know, whether it's, you know, in-game advertising or augmented reality. But to return to Xbox and Microsoft for a little bit, and the Game Pass, which as I said earlier, we sort of mentioned and I wanted to come back to. Can you just talk about briefly what it is, for those not in the know. I mean, it's generally considered sort of, you know, I guess the Netflix of gaming, you know, like subscription based service. Do you want to cover it in slightly more detail? Or?
Yeah, sure. And I think the Netflix of gaming is kind of the biggest, like the easiest explanation to it, because it really, like, people understand what it is. But just before I go into that, I want to give a bit more context around it and around kind of Microsoft's strategy. Their strategy is all about the three C's. So the console, the cloud, and the community. So console really being able to provide the most powerful console ever to have the best gaming experience in your living room. The cloud, so best gaming experience across any device, whether it's on your PC, your Android device, hopefully other devices soon. And community, so being able to be with your friends and family. And the Xbox, the Game Pass, is really what brings those kind of three C's together, which, like you're saying, enables you for a monthly fee. So I think it's around $12.99 in the UK to give you access to more than 100 games to play cross-device. So it's really being able to, the nirvana of gaming, to being able to start playing on your console, and then as you're on the go, continue playing on your mobile and so on. I mean, in terms of the popularity of it, Microsoft reached 18 million Xbox Game Pass subscribers this January. So that's around 20% of the total 100 million Xbox users. And one interesting fact was that with the release of the new console, 70% of the users who bought the new console also subscribed to the Xbox Game Pass. So that's very interesting how that gaming is not just on the console, but it's really, you know, where and how and cross device.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm a classic case, because that, you know, I was looking at some of the really great story driven games on PlayStation like a year ago, and I was like, okay, PlayStation, Xbox, what do I do? And you know, the Game Pass really swung it for me, because I was reading things about how, you know, Microsoft kind of centering everything around that kind of subscription-based type model to kind of, you know, give you access to so much more just through a regular subscription. It does feel like in the last few years, and again, we've had a Marketing Society member write about this, the rise of kind of subscription-based services being a thing that, you know, a lot of brands perhaps should aim for. But I think Disney are doing the same thing. They're centering everything they do around Disney Plus. It's really interesting to see.
Just one thing I want to add is, like, just to put it into perspective, I mean, an Xbox game is around $50, £50. Mm. So for $12.99, you actually have access to also new titles. You have access to EA Play, so to FIFA. And now with the acquisition of Bethesda, you have more and more of these kind of Bethesda games also available on the Game Pass. So it's really a cost-efficient way of trialing titles and not having to play the, you know, pay this fortune on just one game that you would be playing with your friends.
Yeah, no, I've discovered a lot on there, and it's been really fun. And you get to, like you say, you get to test stuff out and see what you like, what the kind of thing is for you. And there's so much out there now compared to a decade ago when I used to do it. One of the things I wanted to talk about, another sort of inventiveness thing, if you like, I think that there was something on one of your presentations where you were talking about the kind of the Xbox landing page when you load your console up, and kind of one of the boxes you have is sort of a kind of feature advertising box. So that's my phrase. But I think you were using the example of something that you did with Pringles and the game West of Dead, which is kind of like, I played West of Dead really briefly, but I've forgotten what it is. It's kind of like a shoot 'em up sort of comic book style game. Can you talk about what that was all about with Pringles and that game?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so Pringles worked with Gray, the agency, to create the TV ad. And the concept of the TV ad was bringing Frank, so the zombie from the West of Dead game, coming out of your TV and stealing the Pringles from the gamer sitting on his couch. And basically, they reached out to us and they showed us the TV ad. And they said, well, hey, guys, how can we promote and take this gamification further? So we looked at it, and there was obviously, like you're saying, a natural alignment with the Xbox, with the gaming platform, because the West of Dead game is available on the Xbox Game Pass for free. So we created a custom mini game around the concept of stealing a pack of Pringles from Frank the Zombie. And I know we spoke about these types of gamification elements a bit earlier with Luke. But on these types of experiences, we see a dwell time of an average of more than 3 minutes. So it is like a very funny little arcade game. I think you told me that you played it, right, on your Xbox.
I played it briefly, and I couldn't shoot very well, so I hadn't really figured out, because it's a perspective of like above. You're looking down on the action, so it's I thought it was really cool because it had that graphic novel kind of element to it. Mm-hmm. I was terrible at shooting, so I ended up giving up on it.
Yeah, I mean, the custom game we created was a bit more simple because just had to steal the pack of Pringles from the zombie. But the funny thing was also that we added an element of web AR into the landing experience. So you would arrive on the experience, you had the possibility of playing West of Dead, you had more information about Pringles and the co-branding with Xbox, but also you had the ability to scan the QR code directly on your TV and bring Frank the zombie into your living room. So I thought this was a really fun way of having like a cross-device gamification in your living room. And then the Riot team extended this even further by creating some multiple in-store experientials where users could interact with that game, in those kind of supermarkets.
And I mean, so I guess I wanted to touch on that example because, again, it was to illustrate this whole thing of something Luke said earlier about, you know, just brands being playful and just having fun and trying to work out ways that they can, extend the things that they do in ways that feel kind of natural to the gaming community, perhaps, and don't feel like they're, you know, trying to dictate to them or say buy our stuff, but they're sort of adding to the experience. You know, is that the kind of best way for them to approach it, to be a little bit more authentic?
Yeah, that's totally correct. I mean, the relationship we have with a console is different to, say, your phone, your tablet. I mean, you go on the console to be entertained. You're not multitasking. You're really focusing. And the gamer is very demanding, and you don't want to be disruptive in that experience. Therefore, it's important for a brand that is not entertainment, therefore not a game publisher or an app partner, to provide some sort of alignment with gaming and to give some sort of value to the gamer. I mean, imagine you're paying already also, not you bought the console £500 and you're also paying for a subscription. It's as if you would see ads on your Netflix, right? You would not be very happy. And therefore, this natural alignment is very important to bring that kind of added value to the gamer and become natural, like we're saying, to the platform.
Mm. Yeah, I mentioned product placement in like TV shows earlier, and it feels a little bit like that, where if you're watching your favorite TV show and they start to like drop in a few products here and there, you'll accept it if the show's still good. But if they start to do it in a really heavy-handed way, it will start to annoy you as a viewer because you're like, okay, this is getting silly now. You're ruining my experience. So it's that sort of really naturalistic way of perhaps blending in. We're running out of time, so we got to round this conversation up. But I wanted to kind of finish really by asking you both kind of what excites you about the year ahead in terms of the world of gaming and how brands will can fit into it and play a part.
So what I'm super excited about the year ahead is to see kind of the full capabilities of cloud gaming and not having to own console. I mean, I'm looking forward to going out. To taking the metro, I'm based in Paris, to being able to not just play on my Xbox and really be able to take this gaming experience outside of my home.
Yeah, I realized because I've got the Game Pass app on my phone, but I haven't really done anything with it. So I still just do everything on a console. I mean, I'm at home at the moment, but maybe when I'm out and about more, I'll, on train journeys or something, then I'll be able to do that. But, well, what about you, Luke?
I mean, first and foremost, Halo is coming back this year. I'm really excited about that, and not just because it's a new Halo game and I'm a massive Halo fan, but it's because I can play it now kind of more freely with my friends and share that experience. So Halo for me has always been a co-op game. And now I just have more chances to play that with a wider kind of circle of friends because I don't have to have them both on Xbox. They can sort of be cross-playing Xbox, PC. I can still join the game when I'm away from my TV. that's what's really excited now, is just having access to that. And it goes back to points earlier, is kind of just seeing how much even more accessible gaming will become. Mm. But then on topic, like the crossover and collaborations with brands and sort of in gaming, there's been some really good examples today, and I'm just looking forward to kind of seeing where that goes in the future.
I think, I suppose just as on a final note, that point about accessibility is interesting, because as the world starts to open up, we'll naturally be at home less. So will we be gaming less? But I guess your point is that it's that sort of the fact that it's opening up and you're not tied to your house and your console, and the connecting people and communities around the world, I think is probably what's going to keep that going, I imagine.
Yeah, for sure. And like through lockdown, we've seen people coming into games as a way to connect. And a lot of people who have done that during a lockdown are doing that to continue to go forward. Like I know a lot of parents who got into Fortnite for the first time because they recognized their children were spending a lot of time in Fortnite, and we can't go to the park, so let's play together in Fortnite. And now they're kind of recognizing that's a place they can sort of have these great experiences and connect not just with their children, but with also with their friends. It's been great to see.
Yeah, I think that's it's almost the same as the other technology, isn't it? You know, everyone had to discover Zoom or something like that in the past year. And it doesn't mean when the world goes back to normal, they're just going to go back to hundreds of face-to-face meetings or whatever in terms of work, whereas it will be a blend of the two things. But it's just suddenly adding, realizing that you've got this extra thing that you maybe didn't discover before. I discovered it a year ago, and I'm sure I'm going to keep it going after lockdown, because it's just been lots of fun and, you know, great escapism. But anyway, I think it's a great point on which to end. Lots of kind of places for brands to get involved and be creative. And it sounds like a fun playground for them to have ideas and for marketers to do what they do best and engage people and tell stories. I just want to thank you both for your time, and thank you for coming on the Marketing Society podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Michael.